Hey everyone, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and today my guest is Stephen Ferguson. He's a Marine Corps veteran and the founder of Honor Guard Coffee, which is dedicated to breaking down the barriers veterans face when seeking service dogs. And we're going to talk about his time in the Marine Corps, his challenges after leaving the service, and how he found healing through his service dog. So before we get into all that, Stephen, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Hey, thank you, Scott. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So could you start by telling us, a little bit about your time in the Marine Corps? I know you've deployed a couple times to Afghanistan and Europe, I guess, during your time in the Marines. Can you tell us a little bit about your time, kind of what you did and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, sir. So I joined the Marine Corps more or less fresh out of high school. I actually joined the reserves first and then decided pretty quickly on that I wanted to do it full time. I hadn't even gone to boot camp yet. I was like, you know what? I want to do this stuff full time. So I talked to my recruiter, and that was a super easy sell, let me tell you. And he said, oh, you want to go active duty? Yeah, right on. We got you. The downside was I had to wait forever to get to boot camp, like an extra 6 months after I got out of high school, went down to Paris Island in January 2010, went through infantry training at ITB East down in North Carolina, and then over 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines, Camp Lejeune. I was a infantry anti-tank missileman, one of them infantry nerds that everybody pokes fun at. But let me tell you, when I got to the fleet, we didn't do any missile stuff. We just did machine gun stuff. So, I was competing with all the 31s on dis and ass and all the other crazy stuff that machine gunners do. Deployed to Afghanistan in January of 2011 to Helmand Province down in the Marja area. That deployment was something else. It was fairly kinetic. We ended up making it back stateside with most of our Marines in August of that same year. Had a real long dwell time before finally finding my way back into Afghanistan in 2013, this time in the same province, but kind of all over the place. We were starting to demil, the Helmand area. We broke down a couple of FOBs. I'd say we got into a couple of firefights, but it was really just we kind of got shot at a couple of times. A couple of RPGs flew overhead, no big deal.
Sure.
And then got back to the States. Again, another really long dwell time. We went and did a crisis response in Europe. This time I got to live that attachment life as a javelin team leader over in one of the line companies, and tell you that attachment life, especially when you're team leaders, is pretty awesome. Plus it was Europe. So, was it a deployment? Was it a vacation on the government's dime? I'll leave aside. Then after that deployment, I got back, and as one does when they're about to leave a unit, I was more or less OFP doing my own thing. I showed up to work. That was great. I didn't, people covered for me. And I kicked out to ITB West to be a combat instructor, where I spent my final 3 years. Got out of the Marine Corps, medically retired in April of 2019. Kind of leads me into the civilian world, which I was utterly and completely unprepared for.
That's a common theme I've found with folks who are getting out of the military, especially folks who are medically discharged. A lot of times those things kind of sneak up on you, and you don't really have the preparation time to say, okay, yeah, I see the end date is coming up. I got a year or so. I got a year to plan and get all my ducks in a row. But sometimes those medical discharges, they creep up on you, and you end up just not prepared at all for that, because that you didn't do the legwork ahead of time, I guess, right? So tell us a little bit about the challenges that you faced when you were transitioning from military to civilian life, and You know, even dealing with you know, any of the issues that you might have kind of carried with you from deployments and things like that.
Yeah, life really decided to throw me a curveball while I was getting out. So I didn't actually get my retirement date until like 3 months before I was actually set to retire. So I was in limbo for a good 12 months, I think. It's been a long time. I don't remember. It was a long time, a long, miserable time. And 5 months before I retired, so 2 months before I got my retirement date, one of my really good friends took his life in front of me, which completely derailed every single life plan I had. I, at the time, was EMT certified, which, you know, I had just completed. But after that traumatic event, I was like, dude, I can't work on an ambulance. Like, I don't think I can really do anything. My plan was to get the required hours to go to medic school, become a paramedic, and then go to medical school, be a doctor. I wanted to be a surgeon. And my plan was to go to war-torn countries and provide much-needed medical aid, you know, kind of mesh the two worlds that I had experienced together. I'd been in a combat zone. It didn't particularly scare me. And I figured, why not go back? These people need help, you know. Start putting some of the pieces together that I might have broke earlier in life, you know. But with that event, with Noah taking his life, really completely derailed everything in my life. And so when my retirement date actually came, I had no plans. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what direction to take my life. I was excited to get out of the Marine Corps at that time. The retirement will kind of wasn't really on my terms. I wanted to stay in and finish my enlistment. I'd hoped to do a deployment as a platoon sergeant at before getting out, but that was no longer in the cards. So I kind of had to accept the fact that I was just gonna, you know, I was just gonna get out and be a civilian now. And that in and of itself was tough. You know, losing direction of my life was difficult. I didn't know where to go. So I got out, and what does one do when they get out and they live in California? I guess smoke a bunch of weed. So that's what I did. And I went to go apply for a job at Starbucks just to have something to do, get out of the house, you know, and I went through the whole interview process. And at the end of the interview, you know, the interviewer's like, ah, you're an inspiration. Thank you. But pass. I was like, what? What? That doesn't make any sense at all. Right on. I'm an inspiration, but I'm not inspiring enough to just sling your coffee for you. I got you. No big deal.
Right.
So instead, I stayed home smoking weed and reading a bunch of books. And I kind of decided I wanted to invest in real estate, but I'm just a poor boy from the Adirondack Mountains. I ain't got no money to invest in real estate. So I started hanging out at a bunch of real estate groups, and they kind of convinced me that I could start a business, or I convinced myself I could start a business. So I did. I founded a corporation and got into that, which didn't go well. And meanwhile, you know, I'm struggling with the transition out. First couple of weeks were great, and then it just started to get really lonely. You know, having gone from being around my friends and in my support group, honestly, like every day, to now all of a sudden I'm living alone in California, the city where I don't really like living, kind of shut in, you know. Things just started taking a dark turn and took kind of a nosedive too. And I was doing all of the right things. You know, I was going to see a psychologist. I was taking the medication they gave me. And I was doing the work too. I was doing the difficult stuff to try and get better, but just nothing really seemed to take. And things were getting dark. It felt like I was, you know, chained to a floor in a sealed room, and the water level was slowly rising up. And, you know, honestly, I was scared. I didn't want to kill myself, but having watched my friend, who I had no idea was suicidal, really kind of sparked a terror in me that might be my future and it might be inevitable. And, you know, at that point, What do you do? How do you combat that? When you're doing everything that you are told to do to make things better, what do? You know?
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from there. You know, and one of the things that you had mentioned is that the first few weeks after getting out were great. And I think that kind of triggered in me was like, you kind of have that newfound freedom. Nobody's telling you what time you got to wake up, what clothes to wear, where to be, what to do, any of that stuff. And it's like, hey, I can do literally whatever I want. This is freedom. This is amazing. But then you start to realize there's a whole lot of good stuff that you kind of left behind. That support group that you mentioned, the structure and rigor and discipline, that quite honestly, we all let it slide a little bit when we get right. It's kind of, I think, a natural thing. We start to slide and backtrack a bit. But it was good. You're doing the work to get out there, go to the therapy, take the medications if that was something that was necessary. And that wasn't enough, I guess, right? That wasn't quite cutting it for you. And again, that's not an uncommon thing either. I'm sure there's some people who will listen to this right now who are like, yep, that, you know, that's me. I felt the same way. Quite honestly, I've been through, various, therapy, programs that through the VA and, elsewhere. And, some of them are, hits and misses, that you may not find the right one, right away, but, you eventually found some healing, through your, service dog. I think we mentioned at the beginning, right? Was there anything else that you found that was helpful in your healing process?
That was very helpful. I happened to connect with the Heroic Healing, and, what they do is they do psychedelic, assisted therapy, plant medicines. And I was fortunate enough to connect with one of their facilitators who helped me to, one, apply for their program, and two, actually make it to one of their retreats in Peru and, sit with with ayahuasca, with a healer down there. And that, in conjunction with the support my service dog provided me, I'm convinced is what, provided the healing that I need to now be, I wouldn't say I'm whole, but I'm functional and I'm doing well.
Well, and I think with anything, anything that happens in our lives, I don't care if you're military or not, whether you've had a traumatic event that occurred to you or something really extraordinary happened to you, all these things, we are the sum of all the events of our past, all the things that have happened up until now. And, that includes the bad times, includes the good times. But when you have those bad times and you find something that works for you, and it provided you with a, kind of a new foundation, maybe, so I don't think we're ever going to go back to that person that we were before a traumatic event or before a really extraordinary good event. We're not going to go back to that person that we were before. We have a new baseline of like kind of what is normal now for us. And, it has to be, functional. it can't be, a completely dysfunctional mess. And so, what you were doing is, saying like, this house is getting kind of messy. We got to kind of clean house a bit and figure out what's where does everything go? What's my new normal? So you did that. So I've been curious. I kind of have a policy on the show where I don't necessarily promote things that are, that would necessarily be illegal here in the United States. So like the trip that you took, you had to go to Peru because you can't do that here legally anyways. And so I don't like to promote those things. However, I know I've talked to many people like yourself that it's absolutely helped them. And so I want to just ask you, if you don't mind, kind of what was that experience like, and what, like in your mind, how did that help you? How was that a beneficial thing for you?
Yeah. So the experience, honestly, probably one of the more challenging parts of it was actually leaving the country. Prior to that trip, the last time I had left the country was, on deployment. And before that was to go fight a war. And so leaving the country, I was like, this is crazy. Like, I am about to jump on an international flight, go to a country where I barely speak the language. And dude, I have no idea how this is going to go. To put it in one way, like, I was jumping on a plane to go to a foreign country to do drugs in the jungle. And that's a pretty crass way to put it, but you know, it was a challenge just to get down there. But I had some faith in the program. I had some faith in the facilitator that he wasn't going to lead me astray. You know, we built a relationship. I trusted the guy. And so I kind of like bit my lip and went with it and just, you know, see what happened. And turns out that the anxiety I felt about going to a foreign country was completely unfounded and everything was fine. And like the time I was actually in the country was phenomenal. I'd actually love to go back someday, just for fun. Then, getting to the retreat center where the actual ceremonies and everything took place was great. The retreat center itself was very, very calm, very peaceful, very supportive, very caring, staffed by people that you could tell cared. And they had a lot of experience working with veterans because the nonprofit that took me down there, the Heroic Hearts Project, they work with them closely and they have a very strong working relationship with them. So they kind of know the ins and outs of how to cater to the veteran community. And they do a really in-depth, before sitting with any of the medicine, you basically have a bunch of prep work that you have to do to get ready for it. So it's not like you're going into it completely unprepared. They do a really good job of preparing you for the whole thing. And even still, I was a little bit nervous, you know, I'd never done ayahuasca before. I don't know what this is like, what it's going to happen. You know, some people were there for a second time, and they were expressing, you know, both excitement and a little bit of anxiety because, you know, it can be kind of nerve wracking. The actual ceremony itself is so difficult to describe, to be perfectly honest. But it's a very moving experience. And while it probably won't be what you want or expect, but it will be what you need. And that's the best way I think that I can describe it. Okay. There were some things.
No, I like that description though. You know, it may not be what you want or expect, but it'll be what you need. It's kind of, you know, sometimes you got to push ourselves out of our comfort zone, and that might be the thing that somebody needs. No, it may not, you know, obviously everybody's going to be a little bit different. You know, but to your point, that might be what somebody needs.
Right? Yeah. And there's so many different modalities to healing. You know, after my experience with the ayahuasca, I thought, dude, this is it. Hands down. We've solved this crisis. Everybody just needs to go to the jungle and do drugs. I have since matured in my opinions of what is needed because I've started working with other nonprofits working to battle this suicide crisis. And what I found is that, dude, everybody responds to stuff differently. And there are so many different modalities for treatment out there that, you know, one thing works for one person and they think it's amazing. Another person tries it and it's like, dude, what, you give me a placebo? Because there's nothing going on here, you know? And so, you know, right. I guess I just got lucky in that I found the two pieces of the puzzle that were the answer to my healing, you know, my service dog and psychedelic assisted therapy. And you know, the combination of those two are really what brought me to the place, like I said, where I am today, where I'm functional. I'm doing well, and I'm resilient. You know, life isn't quite so dark as it once appeared. I'm not afraid that I'm going to kill myself now, which is, you know, I think a huge step in the right direction. And I'm taking that and, you know, I want to end the veteran suicide crisis. So that's kind of what my life has turned, is battling this crisis that almost took my life. So
yeah,
fuck this thing, dude. It's got to go.
Yeah, it absolutely has to. And I really appreciate the work that you're doing to help battle this because, you know, it's going to take an army to battle this. This is not an issue that's going away overnight, unfortunately. And we got to work together and put our heads together. And, you know, for years, I've always said, like I said earlier before I asked you about your experience, I've always said, you know, I don't want to promote something that's going to possibly get somebody in trouble, land them in jail, make things worse, right? If they, because they heard something from, you know, some dumbass on a podcast who said like, hey, this is a good idea to go do this thing, and they go do it. And, you know, they end up getting arrested here because they do it here. They don't do it in a supervised, safe environment or you know, the way that you did, you know, with all the prep work and stuff. They just go take a bunch of drugs and, you know, or even worse, they overdose on some type of drug and, you know, they, you know, hurt themselves or, you know, even kill themselves by doing that. So like that to me was like my biggest fear. It's like, I don't want to promote this kind of thing if it's going to get somebody in a worse place. But I hear so many people like yourself who have said like, hey, there's some benefit here. And I feel like, you know, part of my job here is like what I'm trying to do is exactly what you just said is let's get rid of this veteran suicide issue. And if there's people like yourself who are still here because they went through this and this experience and they came out better on the other side for it, I feel like I'd be a little bit remiss to not at least have you share your experience with it. You know, again, I don't want anyone to go do anything illegal, you know, check the laws in your areas and all that kind of stuff. You got to go someplace else, go someplace else, but do it through an organization like what you said you did, so that, you know, you're doing it in a safe way. And you're not going to end up making matters worse, by going through that. So, I do appreciate you taking the time to share that aspect of it, but I also like to kind of switch gears just a bit, and talk a little bit about how your service dog has helped you and maybe your day-to-day life and, you know, kind of recovery and how that's all worked.
Yeah. My little angel on four legs, man. She is the greatest little border collie that ever was. I got her. So I had the inclination that a service dog would help me. I went to the VA. I was like, hey, guys, I think a service dog would help. My VA psychologist was like, I think you're right. I'll recommend it, you know? The VA promptly said, no, there's no evidence that a service dog does anything to alleviate symptoms of PTSD. Ironic, because they actually had a study going at the time, which actually did end up showing that there was evidence to support service dogs alleviating symptoms of PTSD. Crazy, I know. But they said no.
Right.
So I went and found a couple of nonprofits and kind of tried to go through their application process. Their wait times are 24 to 36 months. If you're in crisis, that's too long. And I kind of gave up. I was really discouraged. And the darkness just kept getting darker and the pit just kept getting deeper. And then one day my buddy showed up with a border collie puppy and he was like, dude, a puppy's the greatest thing in the world. I love this dog. And I was just hanging out with him. I was like, dude, yeah, this dog is great. Dude, she was running around, having a good old time, just causing mayhem. And I was like, dude, I think I want to go get a dog. And he told me that there was one dog down there. She was real calm, probably make a great service dog. So I drove down there the next day, you know, riled all the puppies up, saw what one calmed down first and said, that's the one. We hopped in my Jeep and she promptly puked as I started driving everywhere. It was disgusting. It was terrible. Didn't realize she was going to get car sick, but she did. And she continued to do so for some time, which is crazy because, you know, she was going with me everywhere, like from day one. But I had no idea how to train a dog, zero idea in the world. I just ended up getting, you know, I tried YouTube University, that didn't really get me too far, to be honest. I ended up getting very lucky and finding a group of volunteers that were doing group service dog training for veterans, literally 5 minutes from my house. I could walk to the park they did the training at. And thanks to them, I was able to train her myself, which, you know, took 18 months or so. It was a long time. It was an arduous process, especially mm-hmm. coming from not knowing what the hell I was doing. But the whole time, you know, from like day one, she was really attentive to my emotional needs. And really the only thing I was teaching her was sit down, stay, heal and recall, you know, how to behave in public, how to be an acceptable member of human society, which she's like a star. You know, she loves being around people. Her favorite thing in the world is just to be around me. She don't really care where we're going or what we're doing. As long as she's around me, that's all she wants. Everything else that she did for me, you know, she really kind of figured that one out on her own. She's real in tune with my emotional state. So if I start feeling anxiety or start getting tense about something, you know, she'll come over and she'll lean up against me. She'll paw at me. She'll do something to get my attention. And she's just there for me, you know. Mm-hmm. And in addition to the emotional needs that she met for me, you know, just having this animal there that I loved dearly from like day one, dude, she's precious. She's the cutest thing I've ever seen. I would look at her. And at this time in my life, like I was not leaving the house. Like I was leaving the house with challenge to go to the grocery store. And so that's a negative reinforcement loop right there. Things are getting worse because I'm not doing the things to make it better. But what one thing that she brought to me of value was that, like, dude, I have to take this dog out for, like, she deserves it. I can't not take her out for a walk. So I would, you know, strap up and get ready to go to war. And we'd venture out a little ways outside the apartment and we'd spend some time outside. And I'd be like, all right, buddy, that's enough. We're going home. And, you know, a little bit grew on little bit. I started to realize, like, hey, maybe I'm not too terribly, unsafe in this little area behind my apartment. Maybe we can start venturing further. And we did. We started venturing further and further and further. Next thing you know, we're hopping on planes, flying to see family, you know, just doing normal human things with a service dog, but still, you know. So she was really this angel that empowered me to do the things that actually made my life better and put me in a place where I was getting better, you know, things weren't just constantly getting worse. So that's, you know, that's what she's done for me.
That's great. And I'm glad that you found that, you know, in your service dog. And one of the things you mentioned is that you participate in the training yourself, with your dog. And from, I don't have a service dog. I've never had one, but from what I understand from talking to other people is that is one of the best ways to train a service dog, as opposed to having somebody else train the dog for you. And then you just come in at the tail end and take the dog and now it's your dog. And, you know, because one of the things that the dogs that as they are learning how to respond to, you know, emotional, you know, things like that, like our bodies give off, you know, all sorts of different chemicals and smells and, you know, different things that the dogs can sense that, you know, maybe you and I can't sense because, you know, our sensory, you know, perception is just not as good as a dog's is. But they start to learn, oh, when Steven is feeling this way, you know, or when I smell this, that's when I need to go do that. You know, I need to go do something. I have to go, you know, nudge up against him or, you know, paw at him or, you know, whatever. But if somebody else is training the dog and has, you know, something similar, but it may have a different smell to the dog and may not be as good as if you are the one who is kind of there with the dog in that training. So, you know, it, from what I understand anyways, that's the best way to do it is to be there throughout the whole process. I know you said it's a long process, but I think you'll agree it's worth it in the end. You know, even though it was a, you know, long process. So that's awesome. Let's talk about Honor Guard, coffee. I mentioned that, I think, at the beginning. Can you share, you know, why you were inspired to kind of start this business and, you know, what barriers for, veterans were you seeking to, you know, kind of break down as far as, you know, seeking service dogs and things like that?
Yeah. So as I said, my journey to get a service dog was kind of challenging. It was probably longer than it should be. You know, it could have gone so wrong so quickly, and I am just fortunate that it didn't. Now there's a lot of really great organizations out there already doing the thing. But one of their greatest needs is fun to do the thing. There's a reason it's a 36-month wait list, and it's not because, you know, there's a lack of dogs in the world, because there really is not. There's a lack of resources to do the training and to pair these dogs with service members, with veterans. And so I wanted to find a way to shorten that span. And, you know, I started training with the organization that helped me train service dogs, but I'm one person. I can only go so far. I can only do so much, you know? And I burn out really easily because I habitually put too much on my plate. So I needed to find another way to, you know, expand my ability to impact this problem. And what I settled upon was there's got to be a way to build a business that can provide the resources to these organizations that are doing the thing, that are, you know, more or less starved for resources, and that have the ability to expand their reach, shorten their timelines if they had the resources to do so. Over the course of years after I got out of the Marine Corps, I'd kind of dabbled in entrepreneurship because I was apparently unemployable. And entrepreneurship was like the only thing available to me. So I partnered with a couple of ventures that ended up ultimately failing, four of them. That was trying times. But it led me to a place where at this particular moment in time, where I have a service dog whose training is complete, where I'm looking to increase the number of service dogs being provided to veterans, it brought the knowledge to start thinking about this problem in terms of what can I do if I used a business to finance this. And I settled upon coffee as a model to do so, because it was the way that it's set up is there's fairly low overhead. You know, I didn't have to be rich to start this company. I started it with a couple of $1,000 and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And the idea was lots of Americans drink coffee, you know, and so why not build something that they can support the veteran community by doing something they already do. And that really was the birthplace of Honor Guard Coffee.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love hearing the stories of like where businesses get started. Like, you know, they see the problem, they have a vision, and you know that now you're able to provide for other folks who are in a similar situation to where you were, where, you know, you're trying to get a service dog, but it's a long road. And I think you mentioned, like, if someone's in crisis, the 24, 36 months, however long it is, that's too long. Like, you can't wait that long. And so, there's those issues there too. So, you know, helping those organizations, you know, get the resources. So, I don't know whether it's, they shorten that time frame, or if they increase the number of dogs that they could put out, with the proper training, whatever it is that they're able to do, then that just makes it that much easier for the veterans. So, for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar, with what you guys do, what can folks expect from Honor Guard Coffee? You know, really at the end of the day, what do you want Honor Guard Coffee to achieve? You know, what's the dream impact on the lives of veterans?
So my dream impact it's kind of evolved over the course of time. You know, as I said earlier, I thought service dogs and psychedelic assisted therapy were like the answer. And so my vision for Honor Guard Coffee was that we get every veteran that wants a service dog. And that was kind of like my mission and my vision. Since then, I've started to work with small grassroots startup nonprofits that are also combating the suicide crisis. And through that work, I found that there are so many different modalities of treatment that are working. And so I've personally expanded my personal vision and mission. And I'm leveraging Honor Guard to assist in this, and that now going beyond just service dogs, you know, providing resources, whether it be financial or consulting, organizational support to grassroots movements that are on the ground fighting the fight and honestly doing great work. One of the most recent nonprofits that I started working with, they just finalized their nonprofit paperwork yesterday, but they've already saved 8 lives. They've talked eight people off of the ledge, and they're doing amazing work. And that's really what has inspired me to, like, the grassroots movements are out there. They're doing it. They're passionate. These are the folks that we need to empower. And so that's my vision for Honor Guard. Empower these grassroots movements that are on the ground, fighting the fight, saving lives daily, and doing the work that needs to get done. You know, that's my vision and direction for Honor Guard Coffee. Any purchase of coffee is a vote for, you know, I donate my time to these folks. I don't work doing anything else. That's a vote for me to continue doing the work that I'm doing, and directly contributing to that mission and that cause.
And that's, it's amazing, because there's so many people, like you said, there's so many organizations out there who want to help. And, you know, a lot of times they need funding. A lot of times they need help directionally. You know, sometimes we get tunnel vision, and, you know, sometimes we just need to come together and work together and, you know, look at what we can achieve, you know, in the military. You know, I was an infantry guy too. So I put a bunch of infantry guys together, give them a problem, they'll figure it out. It may not be the prettiest solution. It may use a lot of duct tape, but they'll figure out a solution to whatever this problem is, right? So yeah, coming together, you know, especially in an issue as important as the one that we're talking about here, is something I think we all need to come together and work together, put our heads together. Hey, figure out what's working, what's not working, and come up with a direction for us to start moving in. And, you know, like anything else, you know, when you see this problem is not getting better, or this thing is not working, okay, let's change course and let's try something else and let's move on. You know, when we come together, you can do that quicker and get a, you know, towards that good solution, a whole lot faster. So, that's awesome. Now your recovery and work with Honor Guard, obviously has made an impact on your life. And, I'm sure plenty of other people, you know, you just mentioned that other organization that just got started up has already saved 8 lives. You know, the way I look at it is if you can impact just one life, it's a mission accomplished, but, you know, they've accomplished that mission 8 times already. you know, and hopefully many more in the future. Do you have any advice for veterans or even their family members or so who might be having you know, a similar challenge to what you went through? They might be going through that same kind of journey. You know, what would you advise them? Like, how do they work through that?
Yeah, that's a challenge. I think the most valuable thing is to find a community to plug into. You know, whether it be a gaming community or, you know, a community of people who find catharsis in growing things, they're out there. The challenge is that they're difficult to find. And that is something that I'm working on solving the issue. I'd like to make a, you know, consolidated space where, you know, veterans can come and be like, okay, this is actually my list of resources. What sounds like it would be helpful? But, you know, my advice is, one, don't be afraid to get help. I know I kind of talked how my psychologist didn't really help me. It didn't help me in the moment. It did give me the tools I needed later on to do difficult internal work and start, you know, making progress towards healing. So definitely, see a therapist, a psychologist. There is value in it. Beyond that, you know, kind of do some internal looking. I knew a service dog would help me. And I think that if you look internally, you might see what maybe might be a resource that would help you. And if you have that inkling, pursue it, find a way to do it. You know, your life is worth fighting for. So fight for the motherfucker, you know?
100%. That's a great way to put it. Fight. And that's, I think, what we're all trying to do. We're fighting for each other. We're fighting to help keep these veterans around. We don't want to have them, just taking themselves out. Like that's not what anybody wants, out of all this. So, so we fight for each other and we fight to find solutions. And like you said, not every solution is going to be the right fit for every single person. And so, we're going to have a bunch of different tools out there. Service dogs being one, the traditional talk therapy might be another, gaming communities. But to your point, that community is a huge thing. And I think one of the problems that people end up facing is that they may in the back of their head say, yeah, you know what? Certain XYZ community, whatever it is, might be a good community for me. But I just don't want to get out of the house. Kind of like the situation where you were in, where you just kind of stayed in your apartment, and even going to get groceries was a struggle for you. And a lot of times people just get in that headspace where they don't even want to leave the house, for whatever reasons. And when you're in that mindset where you don't even want to leave, even that thing that sounds like, hey, maybe that could be a good thing. Maybe if I join that community or if I get involved with these people, that might be a good thing. You're at that point where you're just like, you know what? It's not worth it. I don't want to do it, but it is worth it, to get out there. Because it literally, we're talking about your life here. And like you said, your life is worth it. I'm glad that we're able to sit here and have this conversation in a positive way, that, your story didn't turn out a different way. And for the listeners who don't know, you and I just met probably like 5 minutes before we started this interview, face to face, like in virtual, but still, like, I don't care that we just met. I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that you have a story to tell, that you have, the ability to now make a positive impact on the world. For the folks who are out there, it's like, that darkness is just closing in on them. Yeah, it sucks. It sucks when you're in that darkness and that cloud is getting darker. But when you look at somebody like yourself who was in that place, and now you're able to take that experience and help shine some light on some people, I think that's honestly just a purely inspirational story that, there is a light at the end of that tunnel. As dark as it may seem at this point, there is a light there. It may be very dim right now, but keep pushing through. And that light will start to get brighter. And I think that's kind of the message you're trying to cross, right?
Yeah. I mean, there may not feel like there's any light at all. There wasn't for me when I was in that place. I thought for sure that this was just what life was going to be, that it was going to be miserable. And honestly, if you'd have told me I'd be here talking to you 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I'd have thought you were, obviously you're doing some of them bad drugs, because, you never know where life's going to take you, and it could turn out to be really fucking great,
Yeah.
So get in there and fight, because your life's worth it. If you're struggling and you don't know how to find a community, look me up on LinkedIn. I know. When you separated, dude, they made you make a LinkedIn. So find me on LinkedIn, Stephen Ferguson. I think I'm like one of a few on there. It's me and my dog sitting, being filmed for a podcast. I'm the only idiot on there that didn't use a professional headshot. Dude, reach out to me and I'll try and find you a community you get plugged in with.
Perfect. I'll put that link in the show notes as well. I'll find you. I'll do the legwork and I'll find you on LinkedIn. We'll get connected if we're not already. I think we might actually be, but I'll get that link in the show notes. But speaking of links, for the listeners who want to find Honor Guard Coffee and support the mission that you guys are taking on, where can they go to find more information?
HonorGuardCoffee.com. is the primary place for it. You know, I mean, I guess we should probably, we do have social media. I'm not a social media whiz. Neither is my business partner. And so our social media heavily reflects that. It's a little bit embarrassing. I'm not gonna lie, but you know, it is what it is. It's where we're at. The website is the best place to go. On there, you can find a support email address, which is actually just, it just goes to my inbox. If you have questions, just email support and the old, I'll be the one emailing you back. Yep. Honorguardcoffee.com.
Excellent. Great. And I'll have a link to that in the show notes as well as your LinkedIn, and I'll include your social media links in there as well to maybe light a little fire under your ass to get you more involved on social media if you start seeing a flood of people following you. Anyways, I'll, for the listeners, I'll have those links in the show notes as well, so you can check them out. But yeah, if you're into coffee, most people these days I find are coffee drinkers. So if you're going to be drinking coffee anyways, you might as well be helping support the veterans and the military community. Might as well get your coffee from Honor Guard Coffee. So go check it out. Again, that link will be in the show notes. Steven, it's been great hearing your story, learning about your journey from Marine Corps to, you know, the struggles that you had, the journey that you went through to find healing and find the light, you know, turn that light back on, spark that back in yourself. And now the work that you're doing with Honor Guard Coffee to help support the military, the veteran community, with, you know, providing these service dogs, because you're right, it's a challenge to get these. It's really expensive. It takes a lot of resources and dedication, and you know, folks like you are the ones who help make it happen. So thank you so much again for everything that you do. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Scott. It's been a great conversation.